Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Georgia. With me is Greg Velasquez in Iowa. We talk about U.S. men's soccer.
We're going to quickly take a snapshot of where the roster stands at the end of qualifying, who's a lock, who's not a lock, where the areas of concern are as we prepare for the trip to Qatar. Greg, how you doing?
Bells, I'm doing great. I'm actually pretty excited to talk about who's sort of in that snapshot in 4K, who's a little fuzzier on the edges, because I think it's kind of interesting how the pictures come together over the last 9 months.
Yeah, you know, just like shuffling through rosters over the last several months has yielded some new insights for me. Just like looking at who played when, and I'm kind of approaching the subject as if the rosters will be 23 players. I know it's possible there will be 26, but there's nothing solid on that yet. How are you reconciling that eventuality?
So I feel like it will. I'm like almost sure that it will be expanded to 26. But I think for the purposes of this discussion, we should stick it at 23. Because I think that will help narrow the focus a little bit better. Because if you go to 26, then you add a lot of... I mean, then some guys just, I think for me, who are on the fringes, instantly become locks with those three extra spots. And then it makes a lot of other things a lot fuzzier.
Should we... We're not going to have a lot to say, but should we talk a little bit about the draw? How are you? I know we talked about it on the Monday review, but you haven't had a chance to weigh in on the opponents.
I think it's awesome. I think the draw, I mean, again, we're at the World Cup, right? This is the whole thing. It's the World Cup is a party where you hope to perform some decent soccer while you're there. And so I'm super excited about the draw. I think it's incredible that, you know, between us, Iran, and Wales, it's almost like a ELO dead heat for the three teams, which is a ridiculous situation to be in now that they seed the pots, mostly because Wales, as that European playoff team, got stuck in pot four. But I don't like dislike it. Like, I think this is great. Again, I don't want to go to the World Cup and get like a super easy game. That's for me. The whole point is like, this is a chance every 4 years to see how our players do against really good players. So I'm excited to get a nominal near like group of a group of plateau, at least.
Yeah.
In the rankings, Wales are the best team in that, remaining in that trio of Ukraine, Wales, Scotland. So they sort of are the, you know, if they make it out, they would be the toughest pot four team by far.
Okay. I see.
Just from a ranking standpoint. But again, like it's awesome. And so, you know, I'm seeing people talk about who's going to be underdogs and who we should be favored against. And I just don't have any opinion about who we should or shouldn't be favored against in this, out of this four team pot. Like, it is very much the case that we can lose any of these soccer games and we can get a result in any of these soccer games. For me, it's just going to be a great,
I don't imagine that'll get any clearer before the actual World Cup either. It's like, could be three W's or three L's.
Exactly.
And three D's.
That's the other fun part of this is, I mean, we know plenty of the England players, right? We watched them get to a Euro final, like a year ago, but I don't know the first thing about Iran. Like, and I'm not even embarrassed to say it. I barely know anything about Wales, right? I know they have Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey. We played them in a friendly, but we didn't play any of their first team players because they were in the middle of Euro qualifying, I think.
Yeah.
It might have even been World Cup qualifying, but they had two actual competitive, meaningful games on either side of our friendly. So we didn't see any of their real players. And we were playing a bunch of like brand new faces too.
Yeah.
So that friendly isn't going to like tell us
Sebastian Legette at the nine as well.
Yeah, we had the false nine. It was Musa's first cap, Reyna's first cap, Conrad De La Fuente as our other winger. So like just throw that game out essentially. And just the ignorance, my personal ignorance of Wales, Scotland, Ukraine, and Iran because of the U.S. bubble that I live in soccer-wise is just, it's ridiculous. So I'm super excited to have the 9 months to sort of bury myself in videotape for Iran for sure. And then after the playoff, figure out which of those teams to really dig into.
We can really, you know, we can really burnish our soccer hipster credentials with some deep dives on Iran. Cause they're going to be fun to dive in on. I think they got a lot of nice players. I put this clip on the Discord earlier today, but the assist from Hossein Kanani to Sardar Azmoun in the for the opener against Lebanon, sort of the game that clinched them top of the group in World Cup qualifying ahead of South Korea. Gorgeous pass. Gorgeous pass.
Yeah, I feel like we all learned very quickly that they have some really good attackers, right? That didn't take long. I didn't know that ahead of time.
Nope.
But like at the draw plus 2 hours, it's like, oh, okay, these are some players.
Yeah, yeah. They got a guy scoring 14 goals already this season for Porto. It's like, you know, if we had a striker doing that, we'd be over the moon. So should we jump into the locks?
Yeah, let's jump into our snapshot of our players.
Some pretty obvious. So just to be clear, this is who we think is a lock? Or who we think Berhalter thinks is a lock, or is there?
They're indistinguishable at this point. These guys are locks. So I guess it's who Berhalter thinks, because these guys are going to be unless like a meteor hits the Yucatan in the next couple of months. Like these guys are on the roster for sure.
Okay. Do you want me to do the list, or you want to do the list?
Well, let's run through them. Let's just go one at a time, just in case any explanation is needed. And Bell's arranged them front to back, so attacking back towards the back.
As I am prone to do. Christian Pulisic is a lock, assuming he is healthy enough to go.
Yeah, Christian Pulisic playing on the team. There is no scenario where he gets bumped off of the roster.
Nope. Giovanni Reyna, also a lock.
Tim Weah. The next man up, and this is a fun one, and this is one where there is a little bit of story. Like Pulisic and Reyna are pretty obvious, right? Weah wasn't necessarily going to be this obvious as recently as October, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair? Mm-hmm. As recently as the third game of the window in October, where he didn't start the first match of that window against Jamaica. Arriola got the start. He did start in the middle window against Panama, but we rotated seven players. So that was clearly a...
He didn't get on the... He wasn't able to get on the ball much in that game.
No, but like, he, you know, that was his first World Cup qualifying start, but it was a ton of other, like, second team players. So it wasn't clear that Weah was, you know, high up on the depth chart. And then that was sort of confirmed going into the third game of the window, famously, against Costa Rica, where Weah wasn't on the starting lineup. Arriola had the injury scratch in warmups, and so Weah comes in, and he... You know, since that game has absolutely cemented himself in the 23.
Yeah, back in our annual review, Vince listed his top five plays of the year. They were all five Weah involvements. Because he did. He carried us. He carried us through the middle of qualifying.
And what's been great is like, or what I think is different about Weah than the big omission, I think, that people are going to find with our locks here, is that Weah hasn't had to rely on like club form. It hasn't been the case that like, oh, well, he's just been outstanding for his club. And so that's what has allowed him to level up for the national team. His club form has been off and on, like his club minutes have been off and on. He doesn't have like a huge role with Lille at the moment. He didn't really have a huge one last year. Whether they won the title, and obviously the year before that, he missed the whole season with injury. So this is very much just like a guy who comes into camp, regardless of what's happening with his club, and has been outstanding for the U.S. So that's a difference here. That tells me that he is going to be in the roster no matter what happens with him at the club level over the next 5 months.
He's got to be, yeah. And I do think he's still somewhat underappreciated by the pundit class. I mean, just an indistinct, you know, group of people that I won't name anybody, but you know, it just to sort of lay it out there. He was the primary chance creator for the U.S. in the wins against Costa Rica and Mexico at home. He scored the goal that got us a point at Jamaica, and he was, you know, he instigated the goal scoring move against El Salvador. So that, you know, that's 10 points that he was significantly responsible for. I don't, other than Pulisic, who's sort of kind of caught up with him a little bit lately in that department, nobody's even close.
And with Pulisic, it helps to be the designated team penalty taker.
Yeah.
Very obviously.
Right. And to get on the end of some, a really nice Tim Weah cross, you know.
Right. Weah can't cross to himself. He can't benefit from his own crosses.
That's right.
All right. So I think it's clear Weah's in, right?
Yep. I do too.
Those are the only three attackers we have as locks. So I think there's going to be, I think this is where we'll have, should we just talk about the sort of elephant, the missing elephant in the room, the elephant that's not in the room?
Brendan, I think is who you're talking about, right?
Yeah, it's Aronson, and I think he's like as close as you can be to a lock without being one. When any of these guys were not available, Pulisic, Reyna, or Weah, Aronson was the guy, right? And we have never had all four of these players healthy and in camp together. Pulisic, Reyna, Weah, and Aronson, the big four, sort of on the winger front. So it's, you know, it's hard to know exactly how Berhalter would rate them in that scenario. But it seems like Aronson is very clearly one of those four. The issue is, if he's fourth, there's at least a chance that someone would beat him out over the next 5 months if we only bring four wingers.
Wouldn't you say Paul Arriola is pretty close to him? Maybe not in Berhalter's mind, but...
I think he'd be knocking on the door, and I think it's one of those things where it could be like an opportunistic takeover. Like, if Brendan Aronson does make this move over the summer, right, and this is kind of the unknown. With Weah, it feels like this club situation doesn't matter as much for me, but Aronson is in this weird club situation scenario where his Salzburg fit is just perfect, right? Like, what he does at Salzburg is perfect for Brendan Aronson. What they do, it's just a matchup made in heaven, and he is extremely effective for them. We haven't seen him sort of outside of that, Texas Tech's like system offense and seen what he can do elsewhere. He hasn't looked nearly as effective for the national team as he does, but, you know, that might, there could be a lot of factors there too. He's been good. He's certainly been good enough for the national team in like a backup depth winger role, right? When Pulisic is hurt, it's awesome that we have a guy like Brendan Aronson to turn to. But it does remain to be seen if he can really hit that same consistent performance level on the ball for me, rather than just be playing against the ball really well.
Can he hit a 0.05 XG header from 17 yards out? No, I don't think so.
But this also just becomes the issue of like his future is unknown, right? He could move this summer, and then we don't know how it's going to play out. If he makes a $30 million move to Leeds United, although that also seems like a great system fit for him, but the Premier League is unforgiving, right? If he goes there and isn't doing well and falls out of favor, then it becomes like up in the air about what his role could be with the national team. For me, other people might think, no, he's in no matter what. Like, he clearly is the fourth winger. But I still have at least a tiny little sliver of the door being open that situations could change and he could lose out.
His profile among fans is high because he came out of the gate in qualifying and scored two goals in the first window. And so everybody's like, dang, look at this guy. And I think a lot of people, I don't know, subconsciously upgraded him in their subconscious depth charts as a result of that. And you're right. He has been good. He clearly Berhalter trusts him, believes that he takes instructions and does what he's supposed to do out there. So go ahead.
I like the Arriola analog in the sense that Aronson also has a high floor, and it's because of that work rate. That's because of that work against the ball, right? No matter how he's doing on the ball, like, you will never get a game where he just doesn't factor at all, because if he's not doing things on the ball, he's doing a ton of work everywhere else on the field, and that does matter, right? And that's kind of the same thing that Paul Arriola will offer, even if he's not quite polished enough at times in the final 22 yards. He is never going to not be a nuisance, right? He's always going to be helping to protect the defender behind him and the central midfielders to the inside. So he's going to put in all this work, and Aronson is that way. And Aronson probably is even better at that stuff. To just always, you know, give you something. Mm-hmm. At some level, you're going to get something from Brendan Aronson. So it's hard. It's like, again, it's almost like a formality, like a technicality to call him not a lock, but I'm still just not quite ready to turn the key on him.
Well, the thing is, if it's a 23-man roster, then, and he is a lock, then, you know, Arriola, Morris, and I guess Georgi Mihailovic maybe has an outside chance here of working his way in. They don't make the roster, none of those three, if it's a 23-man roster, right?
You could, this is where I don't want to get too much into like roster permutations, but I think you could definitely bring five wingers because
Reyna can play in the middle.
You can double dip a little bit. Yeah, like Reyna might be the fourth center midfielder and the, you know, starting winger, but or Aronson could also be an emergency center mid, even if we don't love him there. But, you know, like there is a little bit of wiggle room there. If it's 26, it's done. He's in, you know.
Okay. Well, those are the competitors. And I don't think Jordan Morris has looked really that good since coming back to the national team after his long injury layoff. Georgie was in January camp, but sent home, if I remember correctly. And he's been, you know, playing really well in Major League Soccer. For me, that seems like a lot of people to say they're not going to be there for sure at this point.
Exactly. So it's we're kind of just leaving that that spot open to the field to have at least one guy jump. Weah's safe because we're not going to get two guys that make that kind of leap. And Weah has been ridiculous for us being able to score goals.
Yeah.
Okay. Into the midfield. No strikers on the lock list, by the way.
No, but we should talk about that real quick. So nobody's on the lock list, but it does sort of feel like Berhalter he strongly favors a Pepe Ferreira striker call-up.
Yes, right? You almost have to say that. The fact that those were the only two guys called up way back in the November window is kind of ridiculous that that was the case. But I think it does give you a little bit of insight into where Berhalter's head is for the striker position, that he thinks that those two can do the job without any like supplemental help, like no safety net.
Right. I mean, PFOC was brought in for this camp, which seemed almost unavoidable because he scored so many goals this season. I don't know what Berhalter thinks about PFOC now. You know, it's hard to say.
But no, I don't think even with Berhalter leaning that way, with Pepe and Ferrer being maybe his guys, I don't think I don't think either of them are even close to being locks. And I'm like the number one Ferrer fan, but for where he is now, and even for as good as he has been on the field for the national team in his limited time with them, it's still too small of a sample size to lock him in. I think Ferreira is a lock to be the number one the next time the U.S. camp gets together. But, you know, again, barring like a total drop in performance for Dallas. But no, there's no way he's on the flight to Qatar just yet.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the attacking positions. Let's go to the midfield. The guys that I think are locks in Berhalter's eyes are McKenny and Musa. Let's talk about the eights first and then the sixes.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, I'm the same. Two so far. Two on the list. That's it. Luca's a lock to be in the next camp, and he's a lock to be the third eight going into the next camp. And that's right now, that's as far as I'm going with it.
I'd like to go further, but I can't.
It's the same as Ferreira for me, right? Like, Luca has been outstanding. I don't think there's anything more I would have wanted from Luca in the two games he's started for us, but the two games he started from us are not representative enough. You know, they're the home games against two weak teams in the region.
He played well against Costa Rica, too, in that second half in a losing effort, which is a little tougher of a game, but yeah. That's right. He's done everything anybody would have wanted from him. And I'd be surprised if he's not on the plane, but
we just got to see him look solid again. If he looks solid against Uruguay, that's it. He's in.
Yeah.
Uruguay, the rumored friendly, I think somewhat confirmed, not confirmed by US Soccer, but like some Uruguay outlets were reporting it.
Yeah, I think ESPN in Uruguay was reporting it too. So that would be, we should mention that too. That would be, El Salvador, Grenada, and Uruguay in the June window. And then hopefully one other friendly as well.
Yeah. Right. We saw the preferred dates, I think, for those games, June 1, June 8th. And then the Nations League games, I think, are June 11th, June 14th.
Hmm.
So the cadence, I bet we're going to start hearing about cadence again. The cadence would almost be like the June 1st game would be like players' last club games in Europe before then flying to camp. And it's a super tight turnaround because we're the first game of the World Cup schedule, first day. Really tight turnaround. It's just like coming in for a World Cup qualifying window. You play a game on Sunday and then you're into camp to play again November 21. So the cadence there would be the June 1 game is like their last club game, and then the June 8th friendly, and then the two Nation League games would be like the World Cup group stage.
Yeah, I'd love for those dates to get nailed down and the opponents and everything so that we can get five-a-side scheduled.
No, I'm psyched for that too. I was. I know you were on Club and Country talking to the fellows in Nashville, and I was curious, like, if Nashville is going to try to get it. That new stadium is going to try to get a game in that June window.
I'm sure they'll try, but you know, don't we? As you know, we are Midwesterners. We both live in the middle of the country, but it is time for the coasts to get some friendlies.
Well, CONCACAF schedules the Nations League games, I'm pretty sure, right? So I'm guessing they'll try to put those in bigger stadiums.
Yeah, that's probably
true. So maybe that's where we'll get the cities, and then maybe, I don't care where the friendlies go, but
yeah, I'm hoping for like the 50,000 seat stadium in a big city on the coast.
All right, Soldier Field, let's do it.
There we go. right on the coast of Lake Michigan. So it's McKenny, Musa, and then not Luca. Now on the sixes, it's Adams and Acosta, right? They're both locks.
I think so, yeah. Again, there's not enough time, and there's no clear like player who's doing something so at such a high level as a six that I think they would come in and bump Acosta. And especially given that Acosta also doubles as an eight for Berhalter and in a tournament roster, in that like ridiculous pinch that you might find yourself in, can play one of the fullback spots. Mm-hmm.
And as we'll see soon, he may be the backup left back.
So I think that's fair to call Adams and Acosta locks.
And really there's no competition. I mean, there's no really nobody pressing on the door behind them, except maybe you could say James Sands perhaps as a third six, but he's not.
But that's anywhere like near what you just said. That's basically nobody pressing behind them. Like with as much respect, right? Like he's not, James Sands isn't taking that over.
No. Who else? Let's just talk about quickly about who else is in competition for that number, that fourth number eight spot. If Luca is in fact the third eight, it's Legette, Busio, Williamson, Eric Williamson back on the field for Portland. I suppose Roldan and Legette are in the mix.
I mean, yeah, but by recent call-ups, those two would probably be the front runner. Well, Busio, who played in that Panama game as an eight, would maybe then be ahead of them. But yeah, Legette, Roldan. I would throw Pomacall in there, and then I still am holding out hope for some kind of Tim Tillman look. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, we've been beating the auditions drum for 3 years now, for 4 years now. Like, we just got to audition people. And that would have, I think, like, our depth could have and should have played a bigger role in World Cup qualifying to have allowed us to qualify more comfortably, given the three-match windows and the demands it put on all of the other countries as well. I think that could have been a differentiator for us. It didn't really turn out to be that. Although, you know, again, our winger depth did have to step up because of the absences of Pulisic, Reyna, Wea. But, like, at this point, I've said it already, the depth just becomes so much less important going into the actual World Cup itself. You have to deal with injuries, but like as far as planned rotation goes, there doesn't have to be nearly the amount of planned rotation going into these player selections. So while we will definitely dive in and spend tons of time trying to figure out who the third and fourth eights are,
it doesn't. You're right. It doesn't matter that much. I mean, well, go ahead. I interrupted you.
It is huge to get the third eight right, like because you can't just run your eights for even, you know. You can't bank on them just going 90 minutes every game for the whole tournament. So you're going to have to bring a guy in, right? And so the fact that we have identified Luca and have seen the performances so far, that is a big deal.
It is.
Because we weren't getting that. Kellen Acosta hasn't given us that. You know what I mean? Like, he gives us something, but it's not that. And Legette was fading badly to the point of being, like, having a shocker at Panama. So to have found Luca, brought him in, and integrated him, that is a big deal. And if we can get another guy like that, that's awesome. But it's just, it starts to be like gravy a little bit. So it really is just going to be like, get the top 15, 16 guys really flowing together.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel pretty comfortable with McKenny and Musa starting games, Luca being available to spell them and, you know, maybe start in a rotational capacity. And then maybe having Gio Reyna slotting in as an eight. That's enough. number eights for the World Cup.
For this tournament.
Yeah.
Right. Again, you might have to deal with an injury, you know, at any point. Like, you lose a guy for 6 months. That happens, as we're seeing. But yes, like, if these guys were all available and this was a roster, be like, yeah, we're pretty good. And whoever you name as the fourth eight, whether it's one of the guys who's not exactly a fan favorite, or if it's some guy on the fringe who plays his way in the summer, it will be awesome. And also not particularly necessarily impactful in the overall tournament.
Okay. Well, let's move on to more impactful things. Fullback. I have just
Destin Jedi, right?
Yeah, I just have those two as locks. Why would I not put Yedlin there, Greg?
There's not really. I mean, it's because there are a couple of right backs who could take a leap, right? I think that's the whole idea, is that over the next 5 months, somebody could jump over the level Yedlin is now. I think it's still really likely that Yedlin gets in because he does bring like a. I mean, he's at this point, there's no one else on our list who's ever been to a World Cup. So Yedlin is going to be the only guy right now who has World Cup experience, for whatever that's worth.
What is that worth?
No idea.
I feel like it's Yedlin's job to lose. So he's pretty close to a lock. Still no left back. Kevin Paredes can't get on the field for Wolfsburg, and George Bello couldn't get on the field for the national team in the last window.
We need one of those guys to, like, I would be fine with Jedi running every minute of the World Cup, but I would also really love if we had some kind of a backup plan.
Yeah.
That'd be great. With a lot of those other positions, again, you can kind of pool guys, right? Okay, so if we lose one winger, Weah slots in for either of them.
Right. Can't do that in this case.
I know Dest has played left back, but I sure do love Sergino Dest on the right and wouldn't want to blow that up if something happens to Jedi.
Right. Yeah, and it's the options, I guess, are Scally, Bello. You could bring Shaq Moore and he could play left back. I mean, we didn't do that in this past window, so.
Yeah, like in retrospect, it's kind of wild that Jedi stayed in at a +4 goal margin against Panama, knowing that he was also going to go run against Costa Rica when he could have just put Bello on the field. He was there.
He's gone 90 every game since, when was it?
Probably Panama away is my guess.
Yep. Yep. He's played every single minute since that game. Incredible.
Insanity. So we're hoping that like a DeJuan Jones or,
DeJuan Jones.
I don't know. If we get to 26, I think I've said before, I want to run one of those two-way fullbacks, a swing back is what we're calling them. Scuff. And there are a few of them, right? Like Scally does that. DeJuan Jones does it. Even like an Aaron Herrera has played right and left back plenty of times.
He's the original swing back, Herrera.
I guess the original one, we gotta go all the way back to Timmy Chandler. So Timmy That's Chandler right. and Fabian Johnson could be brought in from the cold.
All right. And then center back. There's definitely been some evolution in the depth chart there since the beginning of qualifying.
Yeah, that's nuts, isn't it? What a ride.
Mm-hmm. I still had my old document where I have Brooks in blue as a Qatar lock, and I think I had Miles Robinson as a Qatar lock, and Zimmerman somewhere down there.
Well, that can't be that old then.
Well, yeah, when I say old, I mean August.
So, Zimmerman's a lock for sure. I mean, Zimmerman's in.
Yeah.
Gotta be.
I think Zimmerman and Miles are both locks at this point.
I'm probably ready to give that to Miles as well. He's been a little bit shaky, but I don't think there's any way he falls off of at least four center backs in the fold. I'd say those are the two.
I don't know that he should be a lock, that Miles should be a lock at this point. He had that sterling reputation from Gold Cup, which was well earned. He was awesome in that tournament, and he scored the game winner against Mexico. But yeah, he's been, like you said, he's been shaky sometimes, and he didn't come off looking very good after the Canada game. The second goal was kind of garbage time goal, but that he also didn't look good on that one. And of course, the opener, he got bodied and lost his footing. And I just felt, I haven't felt quite as comfortable with him on the ball as I have even Zimmerman in the last few games. That's my opinion.
No, I'm just thinking like, I don't think my opinion of his on-ball stuff has changed very much. I'm even having a hard time dinging him too hard for the Canada. I mean, he was not very good in that Canada game, right? Like, he just wasn't. But also, like, that's where I'm like, okay, but should he have been asked to do it?
Right.
Like, he was in the middle of his off season, you know? Like, that's a tough spot to put a guy. And we had guys we could have run instead, but we ran the guy in the off season, and he looked a little rusty and got some time challenges off wrong and was penalized heavily for them in the game. So I kind of don't weight that as much. It doesn't disappear. Those mistakes don't disappear. But I think for the most part, he's still the same guy he has been.
Yeah. And I just wonder if we got a little ahead of ourselves in our assessment of him, we being like the royal we, everybody. I noticed it wasn't foreordained that he and Zimmerman were going to be like the center back pairing, not even in November and January, because Richard started three games in a row before he hurt his foot. He started against Jamaica. He started against El Salvador, and he started against Canada. Sometimes the partner was Miles, sometimes the partner was Zimmerman, and then he hurt his foot. So it could have been, by the time we got to the end of the window here, that it was just a three-man rotation, like evenly.
Right, right. No, I'm totally open to that too. And Richards, I think, is a third center back at the moment.
Yeah.
I think after Gold Cup, right, the tournament Miles had, I think it was correct to essentially say he's the number one center back, like he's the guy. And then what I think has happened is with these Walker's run now becoming like the new number one center back sort of on the depth chart, he makes it slightly less important that Miles is available because you can run Richards and Walker. I really also agree with what you were saying on the Club and Country podcast where it could Brooks and Walker, who you've never seen play together, could also be a very effective center back partnership.
Yeah. But John Brooks continues to be out in the wilderness.
So yeah, all this to say, I also think that the Walker Miles like partnership that everyone's, you know, I'm sure you've seen the stats trotted out of like they've started eight games or whatever and have this many goals against. I think that's getting into a little bit like pitch or win territory for stats. Those guys have played a lot of games together. It's weird to just like ignore mistakes Miles Robinson made when he was with Chris Richards on the field and be like, so
yeah,
the problem there was the pairing. Like if that had been Walker instead, that goal wouldn't have happened.
Right.
I think Richards has been as effective as Miles Robinson when he's played in World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, I do too. And I think I'm sort of more sympathetic to Richards than I feel like most people are. Sympathetic's not the right word. My assessment of him is higher than I think maybe the average fans, but I think he's very good. And he's just got back on the field for Hoffenheim. Chances are he's going to be on the plane to Qatar, but he's not a lock.
And so the reason he's not a lock is what, Bells? The reason Chris Richards is not, you can't call him a lock yet, even though it seemed like we were into a three center back rotation there with McKenzie being like just along for the ride on these rosters.
Because sometimes even if the plan was for him to be a lock at that point, sometimes injuries derail those things and it just, you could have some bad timing and might not get back in. I don't know. Do you feel like he's a lock?
No, I'm not ready yet. And it's, again, just we just needed a little bit more data. Like it could have easily been the case if he had been healthy coming back to that last window, that it would have been clear that he was a lock, right?
Yeah.
But now what we've got to also take into consideration is Aaron Long's coming back. And we know Berhalter rates Aaron Long really highly. And we still have to think about the possibility of John Brooks coming back in the summer into the Nations League and those friendlies. And fitting in really well. Like, it's again, we've never seen John Brooks play with the MMA midfield. Mm-mm. Like if that totally like eliminates a lot of the liabilities that John Brooks sort of brings with him and allows him to sort of shine in the distribution role, like that will be the easiest name to add to the roster ever, right? Like, oh, yep, for sure. This is like this opens up a lot of things for us. This is a no-brainer. So we just have those little wild cards outstanding still with the center back situation.
Yeah, the long Berhalter's affinity for long is kind of the is a big factor here, because he put him right back into the, you know, brought him right back into camp as soon as he was healthy, and then, you know, got him back on the field pretty much as fast as he could have. So I don't know what that means for Brooks. It does seem like McKenzie's kind of fallen out of the minutes picture completely.
He was barely in the minutes picture, right?
You know, I started two games in qualifying at the beginning.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. He dipped his toe in the minutes picture.
Yeah.
But he just been, like I said, he's just kind of been along for the ride for several windows now.
That's true. We should also mention Cameron Carter-Vickers as a, you know, another wild card here. People are talking about it. People are saying that he deserves a shot. And, you know, he scored the goal, the game winner in the Old Firm against Rangers at Ibrox Stadium over the weekend. Pretty cool moment for him. And he's been playing really well. I watched some clips. He looks kind of like I remember. Very, very dominant in the air and physically. Pretty conservative in his passing. And I don't think that should disqualify him at this point. It's not like Miles Robinson is dropping a lot of dimes or Aaron Long. So
no, 100%. I totally think CCV could do a job. Right. If we get to where, but I think it's just Berhalter already feels like, you know, between Zimmerman, Miles, and probably Aaron Long as he comes back, I feel like for him, those are definitely three center backs who do a job. You know, like that's kind of like my description for them. They're reliable. You trust them to get the defensive job done.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely think CCV could be in that category. There's just, again, no incentive for Berhalter to try out a guy who would also just do that same job unless like injuries rack up. I'd love if he got a look in the summer. I think that'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, even though I've kind of been hoping to see CCV in a lot of camps, I also just don't think there's any real urgency to bring him in, because I don't think he's going to change anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
For what we can do with possession. I don't think bringing CCV in is going to be like, oh man, suddenly this opens all these pathways up the field with his distribution. And we are already a lockdown defensive unit where I don't see a ton of ways that CCV would improve that.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to admit, most of the reason I want him to get a chance is just to satisfy my desire for justice in general. It's not because we need, it's for exactly the reasons you just explained. It's not like we need another really, really defensively stout center back.
I love it for him too. He's been great with Rangers. I'm sorry, with Celtic, and he was really good last year in the championship too. He was with Bournemouth, and they were in the playoff to get to the Premier League. Like, he was an every game starter for them.
Mm-hmm.
Super conservative passing last year. This year, I've seen some of his games where he actually does, you know, break some lines a little bit more because he's playing for such a dominant team in the league. The Scottish Premier League, very top heavy.
There are some games where their opponent doesn't generate more than a tenth of a goal in XG.
It's because of his defensive stoutness. But yeah, no, it that'd be a really cool story. It was really cool when EPB, who should also mention since he was in camp and played against Mexico in the Azteca
as a wingback,
that is also really cool for him to get that look. And I don't know where he would fall, but it still seems like he's a long shot. And again, it doesn't seem like he's doing anything that demands like that he's going to jump anybody.
Yeah. I mean, if it were me, I would sign Brooks, Robinson, Zimmerman, and Richards on the dotted line and, you know, buy their plane tickets right now. But
I would be totally content with that. Right. And then just build them reps. That's kind of what I mean about like the tryout season. There aren't a ton of places we need to have tryouts, and it'd just be a luxury if we had another year and a half. But as it stands, like, no, just we know who we have at center back in that position for sure. And just get them some, as many reps as we can.
Have there been any rumors about who the fourth game might be against in June?
So it was, the rumor was Argentina coming in to play Mexico and the U.S., but then Argentina and Mexico were drawn into the same World Cup group.
Oh, yeah.
So those kinds of, you don't play friendlies against those teams. So I think that might fall through.
Okay. Uruguay's going to be a great opponent, so.
Yeah, so we played them in a friendly in 2019, but it was a super sleepy affair in St. Louis. Neither team doing a ton to really try much anything. It was Sergiño Dest's first window for the national for the U.S.
Yeah. Paxton Pomacall's only cap, I think.
Yes, 5 minutes on the wing. But Uruguay, we're definitely just collecting a paycheck. And this will be different, right? If we play them in June in a friendly, like, they'll be ready. They'll be in World Cup prep mode, and there'll be a different intensity. It's still a friendly, of course, but like that will be a good test for what we might see from Iran, a team that sort of will try to sit back a little bit and absorb pressure, and then hit you with some outstanding attacking talent the other way.
Yeah. All right. Well, Uruguay's got to be the game where we do five aside. I think that's the answer right there. All right, and then goalkeeper. I don't have strong feelings about this. I mean, who do you think is a lock?
I think Matt Turner's a lock, and I Zach Steffen should be, and it's more about what I think Berhalter believes. But again, I'm just not sure what Zach Steffen's role would be if he is demoted from Berhalter number one.
Mm.
Like, I think Turner is clearly willing to be the number two. I think he's come into camps, even though Steffen's been the de facto number one. Although even then, like, it's been weird, hasn't it? How one of them seems to always be missing. So you don't have to. I think the only time where they've both been there is the camp that Turner lost his job after Panama.
Oh yeah, I didn't realize that they had not been together in a camp aside from that.
Is that right? Now I got to check. Were they? I bet they were both in the November camp. So I'm probably wrong there.
Because Turner was the only one in the January camp, the January-February window.
Right. Steffen was hurt in that camp, and then Turner just missed the most recent one with not frostbite.
So,
all right. Since somebody brought up frostbite, like, I think the can I jump in on this?
Yeah,
can
please,
I wade in?
Please, please. All
right. For me, like, the saga around the actual medical diagnosis is hilarious. I'm glad that Matt Turner was not actually maimed and had to have like pieces of his foot removed. But like the whole thing is like, I don't care if he actually had frostbite or if he just, had tendonitis inflamed by the cold weather. If we had to send anyone away from that camp with an injury where the cause is listed as St. Paul, February weather, like that's the problem, right? Like that's the whole problem. So,
yeah,
it's kind of taken on a life of its own, but I don't care if like he missed 3 days for New England. It's absurd that we had to send a guy home
because of how cold it was.
Injury due to cold weather.
Yeah, definitely. And I do.
One of our 11 starters. So 9% of our starters had to be out with cold weather injury. That's too many. It's too many of our starters.
It's a too high of a percentage. It needs to be less than 9. I think that's it.
Right, we can't call Horvath a lock yet.
Can't call Slanina a lock.
Yeah, so it really is like a wide open situation where the only guy who I'm like he will definitely be there, whether he's a starter or the backup, I'm not sure, but I think is Matt Turner.
Did you figure out that they were both in that camp in November?
No, but I'm pretty sure they were both in that camp in November. Yeah, it was Turner, Steffen, and Johnson.
Okay. I think that's enough roster talk for one day.
Well, real quick, what are you looking for? Is anyone going to clear anything up in club play, or is it all just going to have to be in the Nations League? Like, is there anything Georgie's going to do between now and then if he just keeps doing exactly what he's doing? Does that just get him a ticket to Nations League, or what can these guys do?
I don't feel that strongly about the Georgie situation. I mean, again, it's sort of a desire for justice, just for him to get a chance, because that seems like it's fair given how well he's played lately. But I don't know. Is he going to surpass the usefulness of Christian Pulisic, Tim Weah, or Gio Reyna? I think not. And so he's gonna, you know, he's gonna be a fourth option off the bench or second option off the bench. I don't know. I'm not really looking for anything. Just want to. I just like to see him called into a camp to get a chance. The thing that I'm emotionally invested in right now is Ricardo Pepi doing better, you know, and I think he had a pretty solid performance over the weekend and did a nice job in the build up to that third goal. You saw a little bit of his class with that, like, really quick 1-2 with Carlos Guerrero and the outside of the boot pass. And I think, I don't know, just I was not having a great morning. I watched that clip on Y Scout, heard all the crowd noise, watched Pepi, you know, celebrate that goal fully, and it changed the complexion of my morning. So that's what's going on with me. I was really happy about that. And I don't know if is he on the field yet for Augsburg today? I know they went up.
No, he didn't start. Augsburg are up 2-1 in the 63rd as we're recording. And he's not on the field yet.
Okay.
Augsburg have like turned things around though.
Yeah.
Wildly enough, which makes it harder for him to get on the field. It should take a little bit of pressure off him. He has been doing like okay though in the minutes he's played. So he's at about half of a goal or assist in expected value per 90. So that's about what he was doing for Dallas. I know he's got all goose eggs still, which is going to be, you know, it's going to hang over him in the narrative, but he has looked a competent forward. It's just, you know, he's fallen off in the depth chart for Augsburg, which again, that also adds to the narrative quite a bit.
Well, you know, he got the start on the weekend and they have another game 3 days later. So it makes sense he wouldn't start. So we'll see if he starts this weekend. But you're right.
Yeah. The context there is their top striker at the moment is out with COVID.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's widely known, but I mean, it's released. I'm not breaking any HIPAA rules here.
Okay. All right. So yeah, never mind. Hopefully he gets to play on the weekend. Cause I did think he played pretty well this past weekend. And you're right. Augsburg is that win over Wolfsburg was a 6-pointer, and looks if they can hold this result against Mainz, they're looking pretty good for not getting relegated. I should say, if you are able, please consider supporting the podcast on Patreon. That's how we make money. We're an ad-free podcast. The two things you get for being a patron are, one, access to the Discord, where you can, there are a lot of people talking about a lot of different things. You can go in there and sniff out a conversation about anything at just about any time. And then the other thing you get, for being a patron is the Monday reviews with Vince and Waki every Monday delivered into your private podcast feed.
The Monday reviews are the best hour of my week.
Oh, Greg, you're reviews. So kind.
Dude, every week you learn something a little bit new about Waki and his like mysterious facade.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty incredible.
Come into our own on the Monday reviews. I think we found a nice little rhythm. Anything else, Greg?
No, that's a good snapshot. I think it's going to be like, I'm excited. I wanted to do the snapshot because I want to come back even in June or right after the gold, the Nations League games and the friendlies, and see how safe we were playing it with our locks right now. Mm-hmm. And if we can add anyone else to the list, I bet there are at least three players we'll add to that lock list coming out of those friendlies.
Luca and
how many Luca was and it? Richards. Did we ever count them up?
12 locks.
Yeah, I think we were conservative. I think Stefan Richards and Aronson probably right at that line.
Yeah, and Luca's gonna join that group too.
Yep. So there's four more. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's a really good 16. I'd be really happy with that 16, and then just fill in the cracks everywhere else.
All right. Well, we'll have a lot of episodes over the next few weeks about this stuff.
Yeah. Oh, there's going to be a lot of crack filling.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you.